Have you ever looked into the night sky and wondered, are we alone? We've learned so much about the world and our universe, and yet we realize there are so many mysteries yet unsolved. If you are interested in the unexplained and mysterious in our world, then join us in The Night Search, a forum for discussion and exploration of the world just beyond our reach. And now, your host for Night Search, Eddie Middleton.
And welcome to our show here tonight. Justin, our co-host, is going to introduce our guest tonight. Justin?
Yes. Hi. My name is Justin Abner, and I am with Night Search. Our guest tonight will be Stephen Bassett. Stephen has been on our show before. Stephen is a political activist and a leading advocate for ending the 67-year government-imposed truth embargo regarding extraterrestrial presence engaging the human race. He's the executive director of the Paradigm Research Group, PRG, which recently produced a citizens' hearing on disclosure at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. Stephen has spoken to audiences around the world about the implications of formal disclosure of the extraterrestrial presence. At the extraterrestrial presence.
Well, you were on a roll there. I thought, gosh, you had all that committed to memory. But
I had some technical issues just for a second there. Sorry about that. But he is he has spoken to audiences around the world about the implications of formal disclosure of the extraterrestrial presence and has given over 1,200 radio and television interviews. PRG's advocacy work has been extensively covered by national and international media. PRG has just launched a congressional hearing initiative seeking the first hearings on Capitol Hill regarding the ET issue since 1968, which we'll be discussing tonight. So without further ado, here is our guest, Stephen Bassett.
Welcome back to the show. We've had you on quite a few times, and I think you're getting closer to your goal. Maybe you're just about to cross the into the end zone, hopefully, this time.
I hope so. This could be it. That it looks good on paper. What can I say, Eddie?
And you just did a radio show before coming on here, and you were a bit out of breath there. You've been commended, and you have indefatigable devotion to this cause. And surely, if there's any justice in the heavens at this time, you will, get what you've been hoping and working on for so many years now.
Well, remember, this is a movement that is involving people all over the world, and so. Let us hope that everyone finally gets the truth of this matter out, and the acknowledgement out at least, so that the rest of us, all 7 billion, can deal with what may come. It will be the most profound event in human history, and it will certainly create an extraordinary time for all in what I refer to as the post-disclosure world. So we need to get there. We've got a decent shot.
Let me give a quote I just remember from Bud Hopkins. He was talking about the abduction phenomenon, and he'd quote the old saying, where there's smoke, there's fire, and by now we're choking on the smoke, he said. I think we are.
Well, since Bud began his groundbreaking research in the 1970s, over a million written accounts have been sent to researchers around the world from people having covert contact with extraterrestrials of different types.
Yeah,
that's an extraordinary number. So, we've lost him, but he certainly helped enormously to raise the awareness of the contact aspect of this.
Definitely.
And helped others obviously come into the field. So we are a long ways away from where we were back in 1970.
Yes, it's kind of like the old Virginia Slim cigarette commercial said, "You've come a long way, baby."
That's true.
This is 2014. It's 67 years since Roswell. One full lifetime. Most of the originators of the truth embargo were passed. So the overall risk, I think, to those living now who are going to be involved in the disclosure event and the post-disclosure world has diminished quite a bit. And we need this done. I mean, there are compelling reasons why the disclosure event must take place.
Can I ask a question?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Pat, go ahead.
Yes, maybe Stephen can enlighten me a little bit, okay? We have some people on Earth that some people call them Illuminati, and they're different groups. They're like Council on Foreign Relations, and they're the Bilderbergers and all these people and whatnot. And we're told that there's a non-interventionist the prime directive where we're not to interfere with somebody else's development, and the same with us and whatever. How come most of us would like to have these people out of our hair, these Federal Reserve people and Henry Kissinger and all these? Most of us would love to have them out of our hair. We never gave them permission. The government may have, but we didn't even know about it. So if we didn't even know about it, how can we be told, oh, well, this was agreed to, by the way, and so you have no say in it? To me, that makes no sense at all.
What is it that you're referring to that was agreed to?
That we wouldn't, that the people in the government would not tell what was really going on, or about the alien presence and everything.
Sure.
I just don't see how, like, in 1947, I was 2 years old. How could I have consented to something like that?
Of course not.
You know?
No, you weren't given the opportunity to consent. This is a national security decision. There are national security decisions made all the time that are not democratic. There's no referendum. In fact, increasingly, they are made without even any congressional engagement. And I think often now we're seeing national security matters being done even without the president's involvement. So that's just the nature of the national security world. And one of the things we've got to look very hard at is, what are we going to do about that, particularly after disclosure takes place? Are we going to take advantage of the disclosure event and seriously consider reforming the vast national security structure, or what I call the secret empire that's been built up since 1947? I hope that we reform it, and it needs a huge reform, and sooner the better.
Right. Well, look at the trillions that go into our black projects, for example. People, I mean, there's no, they had Donald Rumsfeld the other day. They had a picture of him with a woe is me expression on his face. And he said that we're missing $50 trillion, or I forget what, some huge amount of money. And nobody has any idea. Yeah, or is that it? Whatever it is.
Well, it was a famous remark he made the day before, on September the 10th, 2001, of all things. The day before 9/11, he made that remark. Course. They have had to raise huge sums of money for black projects and for the secret empire, and they've had to push the envelope pretty high, pretty hard. But in their view, it's okay to do this because they're dealing with extraterrestrial technology, reengineering, research, and of course the many enemies that the United States has. Some of them inside the secret empire may consider the ETs an enemy. So they have a justification for spending virtually unlimited sums of money. Exactly how much, we may never know, but it was a lot. And that's an important consideration, exopolitical consideration, because knowing that they've had crash vehicles since at least 47, if not sooner, and knowing the amount of money that they've had available to them for the 67 years since, it is very compelling, therefore, that they have had the ability to study, re-engineer, design ET technology without question, and the evidence is mounting that that's exactly what they did. So one of the key issues with respect to disclosure and why it's so important is that that technology, which could be transcending technology, should it be used for good,
It's
withheld. It is sequestered behind the truth embargo. Until the ET presence has been acknowledged, that tech is not going to be available to us, and that's probably been the case for quite a few decades now. So there have been a huge price that's being paid for not having that technology. to deal with the problems that we face. And I spend hours talking about that. I mean, go into all those stuff, but now I have time for that. But those that are familiar with this issue know what I'm talking about, that the truth embargo is no longer without a cost. Whatever that cost was, it was justified during the Cold War because the government felt that the ET issue must be sequestered while the Soviet Union was a threat to annihilate us with nuclear weapons. But once the Cold War was over, that criteria goes away, and now the price of the truth embargo becomes meaningful. And over the 22 years, the cost of maintaining that embargo, the cost of not having that technology, is really quite staggering.
It's horrible. Absolutely terrible.
Well, could you go through the present project agenda here and a timetable for us?
Sure, Eddie. As we've talked about before, we're trying to end this truth embargo now. We're trying to end it by February. There's been a project underway, three phases, since September of 2011. In October the 4th, PRG was able to secure from the White House a written statement on the ET issue. It was the first time in history that the White House had put its position in writing. And the position, which is still on the White House website now, you can find it in We the People section, is that there's no evidence at all for an extraterrestrial presence or for life outside the planet, no evidence that the government has hidden anything from the American people. Virtually no one believes this paragraph or statement because it's not true, but it is in writing. And that is a very significant thing. So we achieved that. And then over the next year, we pounded away at that position and did our best to put that position in front of the press, along with all the evidence, or a lot of the evidence, that the government just denied existed at all, in hopes that the press would see this blatant disparity and use that as a basis to launch into the issue. But to truly do that, we had to hold a citizen hearing on disclosure last April, May. And when that event, which was held at the National Press Club, I think almost all your listeners probably know now, was a mock hearing in which we brought 42 witnesses from 10 countries, 18 of the top researchers, 24 military agency political witnesses. And we had them testify in 20 sessions, each session of two 1.5-hour panels, over 5 days, a total of 30 hours, to six former members of Congress who sat in committee just as if they were in Congress sitting in a congressional hearing. We had an audience. We had press section. We filmed it all. We webcast it as well so that members of the press or the Congress could watch it in the safety of their offices. So that was accomplished. And that set the stage for move number three, which could be the end game, the final move in this 67-year game of chess we've been playing with the government. And that is the Congressional Hearing Initiative. It has been approximately 18 months since the citizen hearing of disclosure was over. And it's taken a lot longer than I had hoped, but we were able to launch the Congressional Hearing Initiative on November the 5th. Now, what are we talking about here? Essentially, what this maneuver is designed to do is to create a situation where the press, the media, has to jump into this issue in a big way, finally. Think of the media as a dog in the front yard on a chain. The dog can roam anywhere in that yard as long as he's inside the length of that chain, but he can't go beyond that chain length. And so that's kind of the way the press has been from the beginning. They can cover the issue, they can write up stories, but they can't ask tough questions, they can't challenge the government on it, so they have to stay on a leash. The whole strategy here is to break that chain so that they can now bite down on the issue and go wherever they want to go. And here's how we're going to do it. On November the 5th, we shipped the entire Congress, 538 offices. There are 541 congressional offices, but three of them are vacant right now. They'll be filled on January 3. We shipped the entire record of the citizen hearing on disclosure to these offices. 10 DVDs. These are 10 DVDs per set. total of 5,380 DVDs. They're on their way now, and they're arriving now. They're going to start arriving today, tomorrow, and over the next week. They'll be turning up in these offices. Okay, fine. Now, the next step is to get them opened. Somebody in that office needs to open them and examine some of this material. That's not guaranteed. So how are we going to do that? Well, we had launched, as of November the 5th, a social media storm, sometimes referred to as a tweet storm. Now, what is that? It is an organized effort to get thousands and thousands of people sending Twitter messages, email form messages, and Facebook postings and messages to Congress. About two-thirds of the Congress now have Twitter accounts and or Facebook pages. So we set up a website called factsonwashington.org, F-A-X on Washington.org, factsonwashington.org. And anyone who goes there, and this site's going to be upgraded. It's a little old-looking. We'll make it fancier, but it needs to be simple. You go there, and what you find is the links that will allow you to find the pages for all the members of Congress, and then on their top page, find the icons for Twitter and Facebook. Also links where you can go directly to their email form pages. Increasingly, Congress does not use email addresses. They email forms. And then there is a statement of what we're trying to accomplish, which is we need you to press the Congress to look at the DVDs that are on their way or have just arrived, meet with the lobbyist of Paradigm Research Group, that would be me, to discuss those DVDs, and they want the DVDs of the citizen hearing, and they want congressional hearings, full congressional hearings for the kinds of witnesses that are in that DVD. Three fundamental messages. We have some sample tweets there. Fine. The hashtag for all tweets should be disclosure, hashtag disclosure. And so by simply going there in a few minutes, someone can know just what to do, and then they need to get on their bicycle and start pedaling. Now, here are the rules. If you want to send an email message to the Congress, you can only send it using these forms to your representative, whoever that is. You have to have an address and a zip code in the district that you are in. If you can come up with addresses and districts and other representatives and plug it in, you could email them. And this is designed to limit email coming into them. On the other hand, you can email, if you have a U.S. address, any of the members of the Senate, all 100 senators. Okay? Now, anyone, including people around the world, and I was just in Europe, gave 11 lectures, and there's a lot of interest in this and wanting to help out. Anyone around the world or in the United States can Twitter or tweet members of Congress, House or Senate, and Facebook post them, right? Or Facebook message them if they allow that. So we expect a lot of the media stuff to be coming in from outside the U.S. And these are the rules, all right? And we're asking people to not only do it, not only just send a message or messages to their senators, but rather to all the senators, and to tweet and Facebook post as many members as they've got the time to do. And then after a couple of days, do it again. When you have a storm going, when you have a social media storm, and they're coming in by the thousands, you can't keep track of who's posting twice or three times or four times. All it looks like is just raining. It's just raining messages. And this is what will ensure that those DVD sets get opened and looked at. Right? So that's critical. Now, the third thing going well, and by the way, the DVD sets do have a letter attached to them, a personal letter to the member, the senator, or the representative, signed by the witnesses of the citizen hearing on disclosure, calling for their hearings, calling for them to open the DVDs and so forth and so forth. So they're getting a letter. Starting next week, I will start contacting offices for directly to meet with staff. We have timed this thing so that I'll be making those calls during the what is called lame duck session after the election. Politics is reduced, political hearings are not held, and the members are mostly out of town. And so we have a much more nonpartisan situation on Capitol Hill with a lot of staffers sitting around with not a lot to do. That's when I show up. So I'll be working those offices all the way through the end of November and December. When the members come back on January 3rd, start the new Congress, I will have already established, hopefully, a platform in which to then start meeting with higher-level staffers, maybe even chiefs of staff, and ultimately members of the House and Senate regarding the hearings. I'm only going to focus on those members who sit on committees that we're looking for. If you're on the House Science and Technology, Space Science and Technology Committee, you're going to hear from me without question. If you're sitting on the Agriculture Committee and that's all, you're not going to hear from me. People that are sitting on multiple committees that are targeted, like the House Intelligence, House Science and Technology, Government Reform, and so forth, will definitely be hearing from me. So we're going to contact, we have a limited field that we're going to contact. And the idea is to get enough meetings with enough members to get a number of them to go to the committee chair and say, look, we want to have hearings. We want to get these witnesses in here. This is too important to overlook. Obviously, the committee chairs are also getting these DVDs, right? Their offices are getting the DVDs, so the committee chairs will have a chance to look at this too. So, and I'll be approaching the committee chairs as members, right? Sometime in December, the committee chairs will all get a letter. There's about eight of them. They'll get a letter signed by as many political figures as I can round up, asking them to go ahead and convene the hearings. So that's another part of it. And then finally, to the extent possible, we're going to generate a mainstream media engagement. I've already started that. We'll be contacting top media. We'll be sending them DVD sets and so forth. If I can raise about $20,000-$25,000 more from hopefully a single and committed truth warrior, then I'm going to bring the publicist into play and so that she can work the entire 90 days all the way into February, driving the media. You know, she has worked Washington for 35 years. She knows the back doors to all the talk shows and so forth.
Wow.
And Janet was the publicist who filled up the press club for Stephen Greer's Disclosure Project in May of 2001. Largest press conference ever held there to date, set date. Over 100 press were there. She's the one that did that. And then she also was key to getting the media together for the citizen hearing on disclosure. So we want her on board. But she's a professional, 35-year professional. She doesn't work for free. So we need to raise about $20,000-$25,000 to get her in play. This will help to ensure that we don't just get the ball down to the one-yard line, but we get it across the goal line.
Stephen, can I ask?
Yes.
When you're done.
So there's the game.
Okay, go ahead.
Good. No, go ahead.
Oh, what I was going to ask is this. You know, when you were saying that the black projects were justified, like during the Cold War and things.
Right, in the minds of the people that set them up, yeah.
Okay, but I have a question for you, and if my friend Ron Stone's listening, I'm sure he'll get a chuckle out of this. But he was telling me one time that he taught in a private school, and that they would have the teachers come in from time to time and evaluate them, to, you know, make sure that they weren't cracking up or whatever. And one time he went in for an interview with the psychologist, I guess it was. And they said, he said to him, he says, so, but who checks up on you? Since you're checking up on me and the other teachers, who checks up on you? And he says, oh, you mean to make sure I haven't run off the cleaning lady or something? And, you know, it's kind of funny, but, you know, like, who decides, who makes the decisions that this should be kept secret? Do you see what I'm saying?
Of course. The decisions were made by, well, the initial decisions with respect to the truth embargo were made by the president, by President Truman and President Eisenhower, which I assure you were fully informed of the ET presence.
Right.
And, of course, they passed those orders down to the Army Air Force and the CIA and any appropriate agency that was needed to conduct that embargo. So the people who were in charge of the national security in the early days certainly included the president. Now, eventually, the secret empire becomes a problem. And one of the reasons it becomes a problem is it begins to pull out from under the political leaders access to the information.
And it's an entity unto itself, isn't it?
Yeah. Increasingly, it's an entity to itself. I call it the secret empire. Richard Dolan calls it the breakaway civilization. it is an extraordinary thing. It's an amazing phenomenon. And it's huge. It is an empire in size. So it's become, in my mind, a serious threat to the Republic. Now, they may not see themselves that way. They may see that, you know, the people that are working in the black world are probably mostly good people that are protecting the country from enemies, foreign and domestic. However,
you're dreaming if you believe that.
Yeah, and so, but in the big picture, increasingly it is clear that this is not something that you want. You do not want a secrecy complex of this size within a democratic republic. The Soviet Union tried it. They built up a huge secret world and ultimately just collapsed. And this is going to happen to any other countries that go down this road. So this has to be dealt with. Right now, we're in no position to deal with it. I believe that disclosure of the ET presence will pull enough curtains down to expose enough Wizards of Oz that we will have an opportunity to really get in to this issue as a people and get the proper reportage and the proper attention, and very possibly we will see serious reform. But to answer your question, national security people make the decisions about the ET issue.
But you see, there's no, what bothers me about that is it's a backroom, smoke-filled, good old boys club.
Yeah, it's mostly male-dominated in the national security world, maybe on TV not so much, but in reality, very male-dominated. They operate in highly classified environments, probably
like
not smoke-filled rooms. I think the Pentagon has a non-smoking policy.
Right.
I'm sorry.
It's like there's so much money. These people are how do I explain this? These people are interested in getting their hands on all the money they possibly can, and if they don't have Congress watching them, that's all the more money they can play with.
There's no question that the lack of political oversight, certainly makes it easier for the secret empire to fund itself, sometimes in ways that might even be off balance sheet. There's no question about that.
Exactly.
And there's some great whistleblowers that are coming forward and talking about this. So this is not a surprise. People are not going to be surprised by that. But no question about it. So again, there's so many things wrong with that form of governance that it needs to be reformed.
It's very dangerous.
And,
very dangerous.
And just to clarify, Stephen, you're saying the goal of the Disclosure Act is to hopefully bring about reform to these type of shadowy government agencies to make them more exposed. Is this correct? So the flow of information to the public is trying to think of the word.
Yeah, I hear you.
Open.
Yeah. It is my hope that disclosure, the simple announcement, the acknowledgement that the ET presence is real, will in fact lead to an extraordinary age of reform that will bring significant change to a full spectrum of governmental institutions, not simply in the United States, but around the world. It is time for the people of the world to have institutions that serve them and not an elite few. Them properly, appropriately, and not an elite few. And, of course, we are not able to do that now. Efforts, by and large, to do that have simply not succeeded. How can we get there? And what I'm suggesting is that disclosure is the way there. It is such a powerful event that it creates the atmosphere for change, and it creates the disposition amongst the people for change, and it may motivate a lot of good people inside government that this is their time to step forward.
Are you convinced that there are many inside government who really want to step forward and are just waiting for the opportune or time when they know it's right to do so?
for most of them, the most of them, a disclosure is the only time. Only after disclosure are they going to be able to come forward. It's just not possible prior to that. The situation is such that if you come forward without unilaterally or whatever, you're just simply not able to do much. We understand that. So disclosure has got to come from the president. It's got to come from the top down. I say disclosure with a capital D, the acknowledgement of the ET presence. However, my colleagues and I sort of are in agreement that there's sort of a consensus amongst my colleagues that very likely the majority of the managers of this issue probably favor disclosure right now, that it's time, that they're open to it. But you know, the national security state does not operate as a democracy. So while we have a majority in our favor, that doesn't mean it's going to happen. But it certainly means that the prospects of it happening are greater than ever. So we need to need to get the job done. As I've said now, and it's one of the most important messages I'm trying to get out there, is I do media, and I've done, a ton of media, and I've got a ton scheduled, and I'm going to do a huge amount in November, probably over 100 hours of total media interviews. Thanks to the Internet, right, media. I couldn't do this on mainstream. But I think the position of the government right now, meaning those in the government that are tasked with the ET issue, is one of resignation. And what I mean by that is that they sort of know, they know that the truth embargo is going to end pretty soon, that it can't last much longer. And they're sort of resigned to that. However, that doesn't mean they're going to do it. It doesn't mean they're going to end the truth embargo. But it means they're resigned to it. And so, in a sense, what they're saying is that if you can get it done, if you can create the circumstance that triggers the absolute necessity to disclose, we're fine with that. But if you can't, then we're also fine with sticking with the status quo. And so it's kind of like the situation where someone's stuck in the quicksand. They'd like to get out, but they can't. But if someone comes along with a big rope and pulls them out, well and good. And so the activist movement is basically trying to get a rope out there and pull the truth embargo out of the government.
Don't people realize that we're talking about the end of the human race, potentially?
Meaning?
Well, there are aliens, for example, that want to, you know, like when Henry Kissinger talks about killing everybody off except 500 million people, that's genocide. That's murder. I mean, there's no other way. Culling is what you do with chickens, not with humans, you know? And when you have, why do they want to get rid of us? Why do they have an anti-human agenda? Why are we being forced to eat GMO foods? Why are we being forced to have all these things in the air, that these chemtrails and everything? Everything they do is an anti-human agenda. It goes much further than just greed and capitalism. You see the difference? I mean, it's...
Well, you see
they
the
really
difference.
Want to get
I'm not
rid of
so
it.
Sure. Let's say that I think
I'm not saying all of them are that way. I'm not by I'm, any I'm, means, you know.
I think that there have been probably a number of discussions by futurists and analysts in government about the population issue. We have too many people now. And people say, well, we have plenty of room. What's the problem? Well, it doesn't matter. I mean, you can be living in a 5,000 square foot house, but if you've got 10 kids and five of them are starving to death, you've got too many kids for what you're able to provide for. So we have too many people, and there's huge amounts of human suffering, and that's generating huge political unrest. And so, yeah, intellectually, we'd be far better off if we had less people. Now, calculating or discussing what would be the an optimal number of people on the planet is one thing. Trying to pursue a policy of genocide, mass population reduction, is another. I don't see the evidence for that. I think GMO foods, for instance, is more easily justified by the greed of Monsanto. Monsanto is making
true.
A fortune from this stuff. They are trying to lock up the food supply in a way. There's also companies out there trying to lock up the water supply. And this is pure greed. Most corporations benefit from more people, not less people. So I think that the depopulation scenarios are more reflective of the great frustration that people have right now with the failure of government to get things done and with the mounting problems that they're facing.
Brzezinski said it would be easier to kill a million people than to control them.
I'm sorry,
them.
Who said that?
What's his name? I call him the Polak. Big New Brzezinski, that worked for Carter. He was on the Trilateral Commission.
Yeah, I'm not familiar
Polish
with these
guy.
Statements, so I can't really speak to them.
I actually read that in a book that he said it's much easier to kill a million people than control them. So I mean, they don't have any love for the human race, and I'm just
well, I think
saying,
that is true, but that's not necessarily mean you intend to kill them. I think that's an aphorism, but again, what I see and what I hear is great distrust of government, anger toward government,
and
it's being reflected in a lot of ways. That's not the same thing as accurate understanding of what government is doing or who is doing what and why. So I don't follow a lot of these threads much because they don't lead anywhere. We need to reduce our population. Unless we have a technology breakthrough, an extraordinary technology breakthrough, which would possibly emerge after disclosure without question, that'd be profound.
Right.
We have got to reduce our population if we're going to have a major problem. It's doable. I mean, we could do it and do it without coercion and do it without genocide, do it by simply cooperation and some incentives and so forth. But, you know, the world doesn't cooperate at that level yet. And
right.
You've got countries now competing to breed more people so they could have more influence. Well, this is stupidity and bad behavior, but we need less people. Now, one of the great debates in the post-disclosure world that will emerge, particularly once the technology emerges, is some people are going to make the case that the technology and the extraordinary impact it will have justifies billions of more human beings. In other words, we got all this tech, we can have more people. Let us hope that those individuals do not win that debate. That would be a colossal mistake.
Yeah.
This idea that if we have 7 billion humans, the galaxy would be better off if we had 14 billion is a bogus and bankrupt idea. There's already more than enough human beings to represent the human race in the galaxy. Stuffing more on the planet is just stupidity and not a constructive policy. So these will be a fascinating debate because we'll have that opportunity. When an extraordinary technology breakthrough occurs post-disclosure, with the antigravitics coming out as well as hopefully the what we'll call the ground state or zero-point field technology emerging, we will have the ability in short order to be able to take care of all 7 billion, I think, in a reasonable way. And that could lead to a planet without want, and a planet without want could lead to a planet without war. So consequently, if we then cooperate amongst ourselves and maintain our population at 7 billion as much as possible, keep it as tight to that, then going forward, you have a very progressively improving status for humans on the planet. And that is an extraordinary thing. But I guess that debate remains to be held.
Yeah, I guess I just have a problem with a bunch of self-appointed people. Like Bill Gates and Warren Buffett and all these people just sort of pontificating and saying, well, we really need to get rid of these useless eaters. Well, who's Henry Kissinger? What has he ever done? I mean, he didn't invent the salt vaccine. He didn't transplant hearts or come up with scientific discoveries or anything. I've read his books, and he's barely literate in the English language. He's horrible.
Yeah. Well, you've certainly established that you don't like Henry.
We're about 10 minutes after the top of the hour. I think we ought to invite any listeners to call in. They can call at 347-838-9142. That's 347-838-9142.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to give the website again for them to go to get totally up to stuff on what's going on here, and then how they can email the senators and so on.
Well, first of all, the citizen hearing on disclosure record has been sent to Congress. It's a non-commercial version for the advocacy. The commercial level record, 30 hours, is now available for download at citizenhearing.org. Citizen, singular, hearing.org. You can download the entire 30 hours. You can download portions of it. And so I invite people to go to citizenhearing.org and do that. The DVD sets with the commercial level version will be available soon. And those who are donated to the editing campaign and to the Citizen Hearing campaign will ultimately get their DVDs as well as their Blu-rays or whatever they have coming to them under the crowdfunding that was done there. But the commercial version is available online, and it's pretty well done. It's very nice. So I invite people to do that, citizenhearing.org. And, of course, you can learn about the CHP there. The social media storm is being conducted from faxonwashington.org. That's F-A-X on Washington.org. And, of course, Paradigm Research Group's main site is paradigmresearchgroup.org. So these are the three key sites that are in play.
Do you have a press package of some kind that somebody could get?
No. Not really. It's a lot of paper
and
a lot of expense.
Okay.
We have massive websites. We've got huge Google presence. In other words, you Google Paradigm Research Group or Citizen Hearing, you get all kinds of stuff. So,
use that. That's okay.
Oh, absolutely. You can draw all kinds of material. We got images, photos, all kinds of things. So, it's not a problem.
Okay.
Okay.
Yep. I don't want to plagiarize anything. That's okay. That's what we'll do.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Sure.
Fair use.
Go ahead. Well, what I was going to ask was, as far as disclosure, because we were talking about this earlier before, a little while ago, and you were talking about post-disclosure stuff, et cetera, et cetera. And my one concern is, when disclosure happens, how are you going to be certain that it's going to be a full disclosure and they don't, release only certain things that I think will quell the population in that huge press conference, et cetera, et cetera. Do you have any, fail states to ensure that that doesn't happen, or?
No, we don't. We can't be certain.
Right.
It remains to be seen how the government will conduct the post-disclosure world. Certainly, we have educated the people over the last 20 years to levels unprecedented. The Internet helped. So it's not like there aren't hundreds of millions of people around the world, if not billions, that are up to speed. Well, they know about this issue, and they can easily get more information anytime they want. But I feel optimistic that the information process post-disclosure will be pretty good. And there's several reasons for that. First and foremost is the media.
Uh-huh.
Once the media is off the leash, and once disclosure takes place, there's just no incentive for them to stand with the government on this, so they will all jump over to our side. So the media will be finally really working for us, and that's important. And so essentially the various agencies in the U.S. government are going to be facing off against a very hungry, very intense media that is simply not going to let up. And then behind that media is the most connected, most networked citizens in history, most of the world, a massive amount of connectivity, capable of following developments in real time, practically, not only because of news feeds and Facebook posts and but also even on cable news. I mean, they can literally follow things in real time. So if the government wants to screw around with the truth, they're going to have to do it with a couple of billion eyeballs looking on very closely. It would be a very risky process. So I kind of think that post-disclosure, we will have a tug-of-war that will go on between the government agencies and the military services and the political figures and the American people in the media. And they'll be going back and forth, pulling, the government resisting, saying too much too soon, the people in the press demanding as much as possible immediately. And out of that will emerge a flow of information. And I believe the information will be accurate, and there won't be too many shenanigans. There might be a mistake or two, but it's just not going to be a wise thing to try to stay in the lying business post-disclosure. It would be a big mistake.
Yes, Stephen, the managers of this truth embargo, surely they see the handwriting on the wall, but now that disclosure is inevitable, and would they not be having some think tanks already working on how they're going to handle the post-disclosure, you know, world and what they're going to say to the public and all?
Sure. I'm quite certain the government has been gaming and modeling the post-disclosure world with various consultants and other analysts and futurists for a long time. They're not going to be surprised by this. So they're going to arrive with a plan. The truth advocacy movement has got its own plan. I mean, we have our resources. We'll have a hell of a lot more resources in the post-disclosure world. I think the floodgates will open, which is great. Looking forward to that. So they have their plan. We'll have ours. And the game will begin. And we'll see how it goes. I mean, I'm willing to be pretty reasonable myself about this process. As long as the government's being an honest broker and we're getting information in a reasonable way and they're not trying to hide too much. In fact, one of the things I'll be certainly pushing for post-disclosure is a Truth and Reconciliation Council as well as an amnesty. These are two different things. Some people get them confused. Truth and Reconciliation, as it was conducted in South Africa, is really about people who did, as part of the truth embargo, bad things. And under a Truth and Reconciliation program, they would be, if they come forward and tell divulge what they did in full detail, they would be redeemed. They would not go to prison. They would be redeemed. Amnesty, though, is different. Amnesty is for people who have not necessarily done anything wrong, but they know important information. And amnesty, if they come forward and talk about that, they would have amnesty from possible repercussions under, say, disclosure agreements or so forth. My desire would be to see a great deal of truth and reconciliation, a great deal of amnesty, a minimum of lawsuits and recriminations post-disclosure, because this is simply too big for us to spend too much time with that. The humans have done, if you look at the truth embargo, and then you look at human history, humans have done so much worse than that over the centuries. So it's not like the truth embargo is the ultimate act of venality by any means, though it's getting to be quite expensive and quite costly, and people are dying because of it. Still, it's not apartheid. It's not genocide. It was a national security policy that didn't end soon enough. So, again, I'm going to be supporting a pretty generous post-disclosure process.
Stephen, we do have a caller. His name is Augie, and he does have a comment and a question.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah, hello, this is Augie. I have a comment that I want to say, and then I got a quick question for you. And that the comment is that these people that are in charge of this embargo, we must assume that they are highly educated, but that does not necessarily mean that they're smart. And
right.
Like you said, continuing the lie after disclosure is not going to be a very good thing, but I'm guaranteeing you they will, because they will never right away disclose the free energy or the technologies that will replace oil. And because the U.S. has an oil-based economy, and they will try to protect, and they are going to protect the status quo and their friends in the big companies. So what will your involvement be in order to squeeze this information from them, and what would you do after disclosure? That's my question.
Yeah. Well, again, to really understand disclosure and its implications, you really have to step back and look at a much bigger picture. This is required because it's a big issue, right? It's like it's like standing in front of a mountain. If you want to see the mountain, I mean, you got something really in front of you big, like a mountain, you have to step back a good ways to be able to see it. Otherwise, you're just seeing a wall of stone. The fact is that while the United States may have, while fossil fuel energy may be a huge component of the U.S. economy, I can assure you that a zero-point energy base would be an even bigger component of the U.S. economy. In other words, in a free energy system, we will generate more jobs, more companies, more wealth than we do now. And so ultimately, it is going to be a huge boon to America to make that conversion, which won't happen overnight. It'll take 10 years at least, maybe 15, but maybe 10. Now, the oil companies will certainly see their revenues start shrinking very quickly, and the value of their holdings shrink very quickly. And over a period of years, they will be phased out. Of course, they will have plenty of time to invest the huge funds that they already have into the new economy, the new super cheap energy economy, and a host of other opportunities. And undoubtedly, the oil companies will change their name, and they'll be called something else at some point and be richer than ever. So from the big picture, it's not as bleak as you might think.
I think, though, that there always will be a use for oil, because we're going to use tires. We're going to use, grease for the wheel on the wheelbarrow. And, you know, there's going to be small use for oil.
Some.
But I think you're right.
A fraction of what it would be once oil is phased out as an energy source. So, but not enough to be significant. And we need to get rid of it, too. I mean, we need to get rid of tires made from rubber. We need to get rid of almost everything made from oil. Everything. And ultimately, we will. But again, this will be a transition. It will be fairly rapid because, again, the technology that will emerge post-disclosure is already been significantly developed. It's going to arrive fully formed, and there's going to be a huge demand to get it in play as quickly as possible. So this is a good thing. Now, again, it's also the case that the anti-gravitics and zero-point energy may have some risks. I don't think they're nearly as risky as fossil fuels or nuclear power. But if there's any risk there, then they need to be managed properly. It needs to be done in a appropriate way so that these technologies don't get used and weaponized. Obviously, we weaponize nuclear weapons, but we also made nuclear energy a non-weapon energy source. Okay, fine. So we've known we can do that. So we need to avoid doing that with these techs. Hopefully we've learned enough from the 20th century to know that we don't want to go down that road. But that doesn't mean that people won't attempt to go down that road. I'm simply saying that the consensus post-disclosure is going to be a very different consensus than we have now. And a great deal of the human behavior that is now common, I don't think, was going to be acceptable or supported post-disclosure, and we'll see a transformation on the planet. That's why this issue is worth devoting one's life to.
Hmm. Yeah. We only got about 5 minutes. If someone else wants to call in, you're here, you still have an opportunity. call us at 347-838-9142. 347-838-9142. I know we have some listeners out there who would like to ask a question, so don't hesitate, okay? Thanks, Augie. You got another question or comment?
And no, just maybe a comment that I think that once disclosure happens and those technologies are known to exist, then it will legitimize many of the inventions that has already been done. The earliest, the earliest patent that I find in Washington that shows how to burn water in your car dates back to 1913.
Yes, a lot of tech has been suppressed, patents have been confiscated, a lot of inventors have been intimidated, and there will be some legitimization there and maybe some acknowledgement, but I'm afraid there won't be any benefit to those people. What the government has is way, way beyond what any of the private inventors have come up with, and so while those little inventions, they'll become kind of museum pieces, and people might, you know, make money by telling their stories or what have you. There might be a couple of things in the public domain within those invention matrix that could be useful. But again, the government has had hundreds of billions of dollars to study the ET technology with working systems to work off of. So again, now one of the big questions post-disclosure, which I'm intrigued, I'll be intrigued to follow, is what's the patent? What's the patent status of technology derived from an extraterrestrial source? Who owns it? And if they've given patents off to companies, is that appropriate? I think you're going to have a lot of people that are going to say, look, technology from extraterrestrial sources should belong to the commons.
Yeah.
It should not be owned by anyone. Others will say, okay, fine, maybe the fundamental tech, but then stuff that's been worked off of it can be patented. There's going to be some very interesting discussions about that post-disclosure.
Looking forward to it.
I'm looking forward to flying cars, hopefully.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd love to be in a saucer at least once in my life.
Mm-hmm. That'd be amazing.
Yeah, I have one question. Does you have some kind of documentary that would be suitable to show in major theaters around the country right now?
No. The film that is associated with the citizen hearing on disclosure is a fairly good ways away from being available. It's in, I don't know if you call it suspension, but it is right now in somewhat of a suspended state. So I can't predict anything on that. My focus is on the citizen hearing, disclosure delivery to the Congress and the Congressional Hearing Initiative, and that's what's key. I would like to see disclosure by February. Whatever film comes out of this, I would prefer that it come out in the post-disclosure world, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. So maybe in 2015 we'll see all your plans come to fruition that you've been working on for how many years now?
Well, I've been at this for 18 years. I got colleagues been at it for 40 years. I mean, it's not my plans. There's a global movement here, primarily operating in cyberspace, to end this truth embargo. I'm involved in it pretty deeply. Fair enough. So great, but it's a global movement, and it has only one fundamental goal: disclosure. Acknowledgement of the ET presence must happen, and it needs to happen as soon as possible.
Time to wake up and smell the cosmic coffee.
Yes, sir.
Thanks so much for being on, and have a good trip to Washington. Get some rest, though, before heading out, if you can.
I'll sleep on a plane tonight.
Take care now. We'll be talking again soon, hopefully.
Good night.
Thanks for listening, folks, to Night Search.